Good afternoon. My name is Carol, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the CCA Industries Inc. 2018 first quarter investor call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. If you are listening through the webcast and would like to ask a question, please dial into the conference call using the numbers listed on the webcast console. Thank you. I would now like to turn the call over to Steve Hynek, Chief Financial Officer.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us on the conference call for the first quarter ended February 28, 2018. Before I begin, I just want to read our safe harbor statement. That statements that will be made today that are not historical facts are forward-looking statements as that term is defined in the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Such forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties, which would cause actual results to differ materially from estimated results. Such risks and uncertainties are detailed in the company's filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission. No assurance can be given that the results in any forward-looking statement will be achieved, and actual results could be affected by one or more factors which could cause them to differ materially. For these statements, we claim the protection of the safe harbor for forward-looking statements contained in the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act. And now I'd like to start by reviewing our financials that we filed for the quarter ending February 28, 2018. And there were a number of large factors that affected us this quarter, starting with the balance sheet. To begin with, change in accounting principles that went into effect for us for this quarter that required that all deferred tax assets be shown as non-current. So as of November 30th, 2017, we had shown $2,079,988 of current deferred tax assets, which were reclassified as non-current and shown as part of the balance as of November 30th, 2017. You also note on the balance sheet that under liabilities, our line of credit that we had, which was with our former lender, CNH, was paid off in full, and that we now have a note payable, which is our term loan for $1,005,000, of which $375,000 was the current portion, and $1,125,000 was the non-current portion of the term loan. I also wanted to point out that our additional paid-in capital went up, and that was primarily due to the exercise of a portion of the warrant held by Capital Solutions, which is controlled by the CEO of our company, Lance Funston, and that exercise for 450,000 shares gave proceeds to the company of $1,426,500, and that was recorded not only in cash but in additional paid-in capital. Turning to the income statement, we had reported a loss for the quarter before tax of $107,189. There were a number of factors that affected us for the quarter that were not the usual transactions for us. We moved from our offices that we had in Ridgefield Park, New Jersey, to smaller quarters because we didn't need all the space from the downsizing that we did 2 years ago. In subletting out that space, we had a write-off sublet cost of $94,992, plus we also incurred commissions of $24,420 for subletting out the space. On a net-net basis, it saves the company cash and expense on for the balance of the lease, so it's beneficial to the company. In addition, we also refinanced our debt with PNC Bank. Previously, we were with CNH, and now that we're with PNC Bank, we are back with, you know, mainstream banking. But that resulted in our writing off deferred financing fees of $112,277 plus termination fees on our old facility with CNH of $55,000. So altogether, those four items I just mentioned totaled about $287,000 of expenses that we incurred in the first quarter that we will not be incurring for future quarters, hopefully. In addition to that, we had two other events. Number one, moved our sales representation from Emerson to the Advantage Group, and we also moved our warehouse in conjunction with that from Indianapolis to Scranton, Pennsylvania. Because of that move, which took place in the month of January, unfortunately, we had some issues with fulfillment. We had orders coming in, but we were unable to fulfill because the orders were being sent to the old warehouse and not being sent to the new warehouse. And it took a little while to straighten that out. And now it was straightened out and everything returned to normal by March 1. But unfortunately, that cost us in terms of net sales, which is why you see the net sales for the first quarter of this year being down by about $70,000 as compared to the net sales last year. And in addition to that, we also incurred moving expenses in moving all the inventory from Indianapolis to Scranton, Pennsylvania, which is an additional expense. So those were the factors that primary factors that caused the loss for the quarter. We don't expect that we'll be seeing that again. But it definitely had our impact for the first quarter. And then the single largest impact in terms of net income for the quarter, of course, was the change in the tax law, lowering the tax rates for corporations. Our previous tax rate was 34%. The new tax rate is estimated at 21%. Well, when the tax rate got lowered, that required us to also revalue the tax assets that we had, the deferred tax on our balance sheet, valuing them at the lower tax rate, which is why we had a large tax expense of $3,113,000 for the quarter. And in fact, the effect, we had calculated out the effect of the rate change on taxes compared to our old rate to the new effective rate for 2018 and the tax cost, amount that actually hit us on the provision was $3,150,000. So that was additional tax expense. But that is a non-cash item. So if you look at our cash flow, you'll actually see that the net cash, there was net cash provided by operating activities for the quarter of $229,950 versus net cash used in the first quarter of last year of $527,734. And a couple of the other expenses that I mentioned also, like the writing off of the deferred financing fees that I mentioned earlier of $112,000 and the sublease expenses of $94,992, those were also non-cash items for the first quarter. So that is the highlights and of the first quarter, and I think explains why we incurred the loss. We will have to show for the rest of the quarters of this year that large provision for income tax, but it will affect our numbers for the balance of the year. But again, it's important to note this is a non-cash item and is strictly a result of the change in the tax law. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Lance Funston, our Chief Executive Officer, who will talk about far more interesting subjects, I'm sure.
Thanks, Steve. I did a little survey over the past year as we've had these quarterly calls, and it seems like there's a direct correlation from the length of time I'm on the phone call and the ability of the stock to move to a new low. Apparently, the longer I'm on the call, the more likely it is for the price to go down. So on that basis, I think I should quickly review some issues that may be helpful to you in terms of your investment decision. I think it's very clear from my filings that you know where my interest is, and certainly the recent decision to put exercise another million plus in warrants would indicate where I think we're going, but obviously that's for you to make your own judgment of. I can be called on the decision to move to Advantage given the impact that we incurred, but I think this is one of these take two steps back and take a number of steps forward down the road, because I think Advantage has a much stronger penetration in the grocery sectors. We used to do about 3 million in that sector, and the Emerson Group was not strong, and in fact the 3 million came close to evaporating over the past 2 years. As I mentioned in previous calls, one of the challenges we had when we assumed responsibility for this company was that in the process of cleaning up the losses, cutting back on expenses, there really was not much cash flow to devote to new products. So even though we had some decent ideas, I don't think we'd do much about it until this past year when we started the redevelopment efforts. Bikini Zone is a very strong franchise for the company, probably one of the Bikini Zone being one of the strongest gross margins that we have. We've developed four new products, two of which we've already placed in retail, and I think you'd have to say sales today have been very promising on those two products, so we're hoping the additional accounts that we open this year on the new products will be helpful. Nutridale used to be a good product center for the company, but was kind of abused a couple of ill-fated attempts to move it into different categories, one health and wellness, the other was a nail appeal product. Neither of which did well. The core brand, though, was always a solid brand. So I'm bringing back the basic core six SKUs on that product and hopefully can revive that franchise. I've almost forgot to mention a new product that I'm looking at on my desk, which is an entry that we may or may not find successful. We feel like we are tempted, and that's to move our Bikini Zone depilatory and shaving products into the male sector, as many of our retailers are beginning to notice that that is a phenom with younger males. So we're taking our formulas, which have been successful in exfoliating gel, post-shave treatment, and anti-bulk shave gel, and basically putting them under a new trademark, Manscaped Grooming, which we'll then be taking into that space to test this year. Probably will not be cut in by the retailers until the spring of 19. And one of the things I would note, that for those who are not familiar with our space, most of the new products that we get favorable decisions on today, you won't see on the shelf for another 6 to 9 months, simply because the major retailers make their decisions well in advance as they're moving hundreds and hundreds of thousands of have to do it in an orderly fashion. Pore Salon has been a very strong brand for us. We don't own it, but I bought it through another company years ago. And it's one of the shining stars in our portfolio now under a royalty agreement we have between CCA and Altamark Products, a company that owns that property. For years, when I bought it, they'd always marketed a product porcelain for day and a porcelain for night. When asked, I could never find anybody that understood why they had a day and why they had a night. No store clerk could tell me, no customer could tell me. It created confusion. So we worked for the past year developing one formula with a sun filter that protects the skin during the day and the moisturizers that we typically have had in our night product. So now we have one new 24-hour porcelain product. And I think it makes a much easier decision for the consumer. It will. And I also think that it gives us a much better report card. We do, for example, at retail, probably a million plus with the two SKUs at Walmart. That would be likely, in my judgment, that we'll replace that with one SKU, the new 24-hour. So when it comes to determining for the buyer which products are hot and which are not, should be looking at data that will be related to that one SKU, and I think that'll help her, which in turn helps us as we look for our distribution. It seemed logical to me that Pore Salon, as a 45-year-old brand in the skin lightening space, would be a logical candidate for trademark to take into hand cream. Many women spend, I think, a fortune looking for solutions for their facial imperfections, whether they have them or not. They may perceive they do, but they have very little opportunity to fix the hand because as they go through their day, they're washing it and they're exposing it. And basically, the aging spots and wrinkles tend to be very telling in terms of what the woman's actual age is. So my wife will always say at a party, did you see so, and how old do you think she is? And I take a guess based on her gorgeous looks. My wife would then inform me I was 10 years light, that she looked at her hands and they tell all. Based on that, I'm hoping the hand cream adds to our porcelain franchise. We'll be taking it to the retailer shortly. We have now tiptoeing, I would say, into social media. At 75, I'm not sure you could consider me even remotely digitally competent. However, I am aware that two of our products, Bikini Zone and our oral care product, Plus White, both have very attractive millennial following, strong millennial followings. So I'm going to take those products into the social arena. The initial one, Bikini Zone, will start next week on Facebook, YouTube, Pinterest, and Instagram, and then followed by a campaign we're doing for Plus White. We think it'll be impactful, we're hoping, and that in order to find a home for that massive amount of inventory, clicks that we're going to get. We are revamping the Bikini Zone site now. We'll be revamping the others as we go along on that campaign. In short, I think the company now, with a distributor that has strength in all categories to move the product, combined with all of the operational issues, I think, that Doug Haas has been successful implementing in terms of cost of goods, all the financial controls that Steve put in place, I think we're poised to do something moving forward. And I know I shouldn't anticipate that, but we'll hope we're right. Decisions we're making are all made with the intent of building a strong base, but I think we're there. It's time for you, the investors, should there be any on the call, to serve demand at this point that we start performing. On the acquisition side, we continue to look at every property that comes on the market, and the only encouraging news is there is that the prices I'm seeing in the space continue to be very, very strong. It's a 3x to 3.5x times net sales, net revenue, kind of formula we're looking into. Anything less than that would be, it doesn't seem to attract attention from the sellers. So I just have to say that in terms of my investment, I feel very comfortable being investing in what amounts to what? A one, probably more like a one in terms of the total cap value of the company versus where the market should be. Let me address your questions, if you have any, at this point, unless you want to add something, Steve, or is that it?
So we can go ahead with any questions.
And as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad. And we'll pause for just a moment to allow people to queue. Our first question today comes from Eric Lennery from BML Capital. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks. I don't know if you mentioned it or not earlier, but I guess one of the primary motivations for switching to Advantage was to get into the grocery sector. I was wondering how much, if any, they've had so far.
Well, to the extent that they started transitioning 2.5 months ago, and grocery was less rigid in their structure in terms of the reviews and subsequent cut-ins, it's a little more flexible, but in reality, it's about the same presentation sequence. That is, the grocery sector is now receiving presentations in skincare, oral care, and many of the categories we're in. But we have not, and they brought in, I guess, a couple of minor accounts so far, but nothing material. And I think we've been primarily dealing with the operational challenges. This is probably more detailed than you've asked for, but we did not have a vendor number with any of our accounts because we were operating under the Emerson model, which was using Emerson Healthcare as the customer recognized by the retailer. So reestablishing those vendor numbers and getting back into their systems require a lot of work. So we're not, I think it's probably too early to uncork the champagne. I still think it's a good decision long term, but right now I can't tell you it's had any material impact other than the negative impact Steve pointed out of losing
the impact of losing sales because we were unable to fulfill orders.
Those orders
in down. January. The amount of orders that we lost, we haven't totaled it up, but it had to be at least $800,000, if not more. And to add on to what Lance's Funston was just saying is, these things take a little bit of time because what we have to do with any of these accounts, including grocery, is wait till they're ready for presentations when they're working on changing the planogram space, which usually, as Lance said, is not as rigid as the large chain drug and mass market retailers, but there is timing involved. And then once we make the presentation to them, and even if they accept the product, it'll take a few months before the first orders would be coming in. So it's not immediate, but it's in the long-range interest of this long-term interest of this company in terms of building sales.
And just to add, we'll see most of those grocery accounts at ECRM in July, late June and July in Vegas.
So is it reasonable to assume that if you do have success getting into that channel, it would be sometime in the early fall?
Yes.
Okay. Was there any...
Let me make sure you understand. We were in the channel. These products have been very, very successful historically in grocery. We did $3.5 million in grocery 2 years before we moved the business to Emerson.
And they, when was that?
And I guess that was...
2004. We moved to Emerson in 2014. So it's about... So prior to 4 years ago, we had a much healthier grocery business.
It was a different management team's decision to move to Emerson, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So that kind of answers my next question, which was what gives you the confidence that switching over would be successful? So I guess you just answered it. Let me move on to just one more. Lance, when you're out looking at these acquisition targets, could you give me an idea of sort of the range of size? Are these the same size brands as what you have today, or are they much larger, smaller? How big are these brands that are getting three and a half times revenue?
Well, we looked at brands. We looked at acquisitions ranging from $2 million to $120 million. And it does not seem, it doesn't, there's no price elasticity at all in terms of the size, meaning you'd think when you go down to the $2 million level, there'd be very few companies that'd be interested. And we just submitted a bid on one, in which I guess the feedback is we didn't have an adequate offer. And again, that was just a $2 million, $3 million, maybe $3 million top-line company. And on the $120 million deal we chased last year, we weren't even in the zip code. Our offer at 120 was about 12 million off the price it traded at, which wound up being 3.4x top line. And I don't think it's in the shareholder's best interest for us to make an acquisition that is not accretive. And so we're just continuing to chase. If nothing else, it makes me feel a little better about my investment when I notice what other guys are getting for their properties.
Yeah, I just want to be clear that it's brands that are along the same size as what you have that are fetching this handsome multiple.
Yes. And smaller. And larger. It doesn't seem to be discriminating against size. And I think probably what we have in our company, I think what will eventually be recognized as a value is the fact that we've got, 10, 15, in some cases, as much as 45 years worth of consistent selling. So a skincare product called Sudden Change, and I was curious the other day and noticed that that product has been generating $3 to $5 million in sales annually for the past 12 years. They seem to have resilience. My hat's off to the prior owners in terms of marketing acumen, because I think that they really did tap into some very strong trademarks, and I've inherited that strength, and I hope I'm doing the job. We'll try. Certainly I'm not seeing, organic growth doesn't seem to have any impact at all. I'm learning on the the value the stock fetches in the marketplace. The only correlation I've noticed is the longer I stay on the phone, the lower the price goes.
Okay, well, last question. These targets that you're looking at, they have the same margin profile, roughly, as CCA?
Yes.
Thank you.
You bet.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from Lenny Dunn from Mutual Trust Company. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good afternoon. It looks like we've cleared the decks, and in your press release, you believe that everything is going to be strengthened in the future, and I see no reason not to, but at the same time, you sound more cautious on the call, but there'd be no reason to expect that this won't execute in a reasonable manner going forward. We certainly need acquisitions, and we certainly don't want to do them unless they're at the right price, so no argument on that. But, you have the right people in place with Advantage, and you have the right cost basis by downsizing to the point you have, I'm going to assume that you even save some money with the new CPA firm. But all that being said, we should start seeing decent quarters going forward, and we should resume our growth again. The one thing that I have observed is the last week we've had decent volume. I mean, some of it's been up, some of it's been down, but it's, you know, we've become far more liquid, so somebody's paying attention. Clearly they're sellers, but I think the sellers are selling to stronger hands, and because there's clearly buyers too. So we need a little more attention, but maybe we're going to get it now with the volume I've noticed.
Lenny, is there a question here as I'm missing?
No. I'm just giving you a compliment.
I don't mean to pick on you.
No, but it's not really a question.
If you raise your inflection if it's a question, it'll tell me I've got to answer something. All your observations.
No, right. I would hope that you can agree with my assessment that you observe the same things as I have.
Yeah. Now, in fact, I said earlier, if you were on the call, that in fact I think we can no longer ask our investors to be patient in terms of infrastructure because we put it in place. We can no longer hide behind the fact that our inadequate cash flow kept us from introducing new products. We no longer have any excuse not to grow. And we did hit a speed bump with Advantage in that transition. And everybody said it would happen. But I was sort of hoping this might be the one exception.
Well, it's Doug Hosner. If you don't mind me jumping into it, I don't mind putting a little bit of a fine point on that. I don't want to say lost sales, but let's just put retiming of some sales that came in and didn't get fulfilled. And it really centered around our second largest customer, which was Wegmans.
Walgreens.
Walgreens, whom took almost 8 to 10 weeks to get us up and running in their system. Although we've done everything preparatory correctly 3 months prior, when it came time to actually hit the button, you hit the button and nothing happens, and then it's a matter of trying to fix what's wrong in computer systems and EDI transmissions and all those gory details. And we did that over the Christmas holidays through the month of January, so you can imagine you don't have everybody's great attention. But the good news is it really was one key customer, and we did get it fixed, did a whole root cause analysis. So good news, if we ever decide to do it again, we're a little smarter, a little more well-educated, but let's not do it again, So, yeah.
Were there any, Lenny, did you have any question that you wanted to ask?
No, I was pretty much answered. I just would like you to affirm that you're going to also maybe do something so more people are aware of us, because sometimes you're doing well, but nobody's paying attention. So,
right. Okay, well, thank you.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Michael Melby from Gate City Capital Management. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my question. Could you comment on what your sales expectations are for Nutrinail? Thanks.
I don't think we have a dollar amount that we want to discuss on this call in terms of sales expectation, but we are looking to reintroduce the product this year, and we're working on new packaging and product. And we do have an active plan to sell it into specific accounts and working on presentations to those accounts. So I don't think right now we can put a dollar number on it until we are done with the presentations and see where we are with the accounts.
The first of which is scheduled for the 26th of this month, we'll be presenting to Walmart. I will tell you, this is Lance Funston again. I will tell you, we did a little bit of research, and these core six products we're bringing back, which are the nail strengthener and the top coat and the quick dry and classic cuticle remover, these standard products, core products, we're doing about $3.5 million as recently as 5 years ago. The brand is a strong brand, but frankly, was just, in my judgment, management at the time made some misguided decisions to try to take it off into areas that the consumer just didn't respond to. Health and Wellness Fine made sense if they had enough money to promote it to a point where people could understand that had diabetes, that there was a particular nail product that would help their cracking nails. But frankly, I use the Thanksgiving test, which is you take 12 people, family members that come to Thanksgiving dinner. You want to make sure at least half of them have the same problem, or you don't have very broad market base for your product. In this case, how many diabetics come to your Thanksgiving dinner? So the point is that we all we could do is just go back and see if we could find a basis for reintroduction. And the, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Nutrinail is not a brand we own. We pay a trademark. We pay a
license fee.
A license fee to the company who owns it.
Inspired Beauty.
And Inspired Beauty owns it. We have a 10% royalty to those folks, but
we
just talked them into entering into a long-term agreement with an option to buy included in the agreement, which I think would indicate at least they think we've got a good direction on the new core products. And hopefully it is the right direction. But again, in all cases, you're going to have to wait a little bit longer, and hopefully we'll...
It's tied to the Hair Off brand.
Right. And Nutrinail, you know, as Lance said, it was actually, if you go back even 10 years ago, it was a brand that was doing substantially more than $3.5 million. And what happened was going into 2011, the company at that time had come out with a product called Gel Perfect, which was a gel nail polish that was anything but perfect. And unfortunately, the prior management had made a decision to take out Nutrinail in a lot of accounts, such as Walgreens, where it had been doing very well and performing, and substitute it for the Gel Perfect product, which only resulted in huge returns to the company and a failed product out there that ended up getting discontinued all over and hurt the Nutrinol brand at that time. And that's really was the part of what caused the company to have to go through all the huge losses that it went through and the massive restructuring. We're at the point now where, you know, Lance has talked about relaunching the brand. It was a very good brand. It was very successful.
And to put a fine point on it, I mean, it was a pretty safe investment. We've invested $120,000 to relaunch those SKUs. And initially, the marketplace is definitely looking for them, and it's encouraging to see the sales that are coming in already before we've even got a chance to present them fully to the trade in June. So I think it was a really good move on a good core product and brand that it has a potential of making some good top line and good bottom line money for the company.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have no one else in queue at this time. I'll turn the call back over for any closing remarks.
This is Steve Height, and I just want to thank everyone for participating in the call, and we will speak again when we have our call for the second quarter that ends on May 31st of this year, and look forward to much better results for that quarter than what we had in the first quarter.
Thanks, our guys. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect.